League weekend. We do have a fantastic guest for today, and he is almost ready and waiting. Joining us now on the line, it's one of our favourite guests to have on World Football Daily. He's a man who we can't get enough of here on World Football Daily. Every other week, we're getting him back on the show, and it's a pleasure, as always, to say welcome to WFD, Mr. Andy Brassel, joining us here. Andy, I mean, like I said, we have you every few weeks now. I hope you're not getting tired of us, because we're definitely not getting tired of having you on the show, that's for sure.
No, not at all. I just settled for the description of he's a man. Like that, that's fine. You can just like leave it there, truncate it there. That's all good.
I suppose I could put, you know, he's all that is man, but you know, I don't want to make your head any bigger, kind of thing. You know, I've heard you've been walking around with a bit of a strut at the start of this season. That's all I'm going to say, mate. pleasure to have you on the show again, mate. There's obviously plenty of great games coming off around Europe this weekend. I wouldn't mind starting actually in a bit of the Bundesliga, and Schweinsteiger potentially still being unfit for Bayern's game this weekend. Obviously, was injured in that draw with Freiburg, and after that game, there was a lot of criticism thrown Pep Guardiola's way just for a draw. I remember the commentary team saying, "Is this a crisis at Munich already?" And they said yes. And it was how is there a crisis at Bayern at the moment under Pep? What are people? How are people making this a crisis when they're still unbeaten and all they've done is drawn one Bundesliga game, and obviously Schweinsteiger possibly unable to play this weekend.
Well, I think for two reasons. Firstly, that there was twitching before the Bundesliga season even started with some of the little changes that Guardiola made. And two, because Bayern set such incredible standards last season that every time they drop a point, it's a story. And, you know, you have to accept that. You know, that is part of it, because, you know, they were just absolutely unstoppable last season. So, you know, I think it's normalish for people to be asking these questions. And I think the other thing about the game against Hanover, the fact that Schweinsteiger's not going to make it, sort of steps away from a big question for Guardiola. Is he going to go back to the double pivot in front of the defence at some point? Because, you know, he hasn't been. And, you know, there are a lot of reasons you could argue that Bayern were imperious last season. But Ribery, I think, is obviously one of the main reasons. The work that Mandzukic did up front on his own. Thomas Müller ghosting in, scoring goals. Arjen Robben's form in the last couple of months. The double pivot was most of it. You know, when they got Schweinsteiger and Martinez in tandem, you know, that was huge. And you know, I think if you look at how it might pan out this season with Schweinsteiger injured or not included or whatever, Thiago Alcantara, who of course is a great player playing there, and Martinez, when he comes back, probably being shunted back to centre back, you know, you're breaking up that key point. And if you think, you know, they always say, you know, what you need to do in any sport is exactly what your opponent doesn't want you to do, and what any opponent of Bayern doesn't want to do is face that double pivot of Schweinsteiger and Martinez. So I think these questions are valid.
Is it a bit harsh on Javi Martinez as well, not to, with Schweinsteiger out, to just put him in on his own though, with Pep so eagerly taking away this double pivot and having just Schweinsteiger as that holding midfielder? Does it say a lot about the faith that he has in Javi Martinez to take on that Schweinsteiger role and put it on his shoulders?
I suppose so, but you know, I think you know, if Schweinsteiger's not there, there are plenty of players who can play besides Martinez, even after Luis Gustavo was sold. And you know, there's been a lot of talk, obviously, with Mesut Ozil joining Arsenal, of like some disquiet amongst senior players that he was allowed to move on. To a lesser extent, it's the same thing with Luis Gustavo, hugely, hugely popular figure within the Bayern dressing room. They're really reliable. People loved him as a bloke. And, you know, it's evident that he's a really good player and he was really important for the squad last season. But, you know, they can get other players to play there. Toni Kroos can do a job there. He is better in the final third. There's no doubt about it. You know, but there are other options. You know, you could put Martinez and Alcantara next to each other, with Alcantara as the one who, you know, is the main one to bring the ball out, and Martinez is the guy to to win the challenges. So it is possible. But the question is, will they ever go back to that shape?
There was a stat just elsewhere in the Bundesliga, Andy, about Borussia Dortmund. The last time they'd won four league games in a row, they went on to win the title. I believe it was 01-02 that was referenced that season. With that in mind, obviously Dortmund taking on Hamburg. Hamburg, who are looking at a very strong side still. They don't look like they've lost too much at the moment, despite the loss of Song this season. Do you see Dortmund as a real genuine title challenger for this year? Because there was so much that was taken away from them, their credibility in the Bundesliga, because of how they played last year, putting all that emphasis on the Champions League. But they really look like they're back with a bang at the start of this season.
Yeah, they do. I think the question is, will they find the balance between domestic and Europe? And, you know, if you think in 11-12, for example, they managed to retain their title, but they didn't manage to put any sort of resistance really in the Champions League. And, you know, they played okay in that group with Arsenal, Olympiacos and Marseille. But, you know, they finished bottom just because of, you know, the amount of fluffy mistakes they made, really. Last season, they were completely concentrated on Europe, so they let the title slip. And, you know, it's something that Klopp has said, we drew twice with Bayern, so the 25-point gap was games we sort of lost points against other teams. So, you know, that's a real test for them this season, to see if they can maintain it on both fronts. I think despite losing Goetze, they do actually look stronger than last season. You can just look at, you know, some of the options they've got in terms of, you know, Aubameyang, Blazikowski, Nuri Sahin has obviously come back in deep in midfield, talking of double pivots, and you know, he has a whole other edge to their game, and you know, he's back in great nick as well, which is so important. So for me, I think they've got a long way to grow so far this season. The results are good. The performance is not always so much. I think they were quite fortunate to win the game at Eintracht Frankfurt in the last game. Of course, Bayern were very fortunate to win there a few weeks before. So they've got a way to go. Of course, you know, any championship season is not made of 34 or 38 great performances. You know, it's all about the results as well. And, you know, sort of highs that happen every couple of weeks or whatever. But, you know, you do think still there's a little bit of work to do, but they're a serious contender.
With that kind of positivity around Dortmund at the start of this season, do you think that's going to be a big issue in the Bundesliga title race this season? There is so much off-field negativity around Bayern at the moment, and there are always people talking around Bayern, but it seems with Guardiola in there and the changes, it's really reaching new heights at the moment. While Dortmund do have this positivity, is that going to be a big factor in the title race, especially in the early part of this season?
I think a big factor in the title race will be Guardiola's ability to ride it out. I don't think there's any doubt about that, because, of course, you know, everyone's talked about it before. This is him out of his comfort zone, trying to improve on the unimprovable. And, of course, out of Barcelona, for, you know, which he's only been out of for a few times in his managerial and playing career before. So, really, that's the test for him. If he can deal with that sort of pressure, if he can deal with the fact that every drop point is possibly even more of a big story than it is in Barcelona. But, you know, the players will be used to it. They'll deal with it. I personally think his change of ideas is something that will act as added impetus for them as the season goes on and as things settle down. You know, if they're not top at Christmas, it doesn't really matter that much. You know, you don't get a trophy for being winter champion. And if you did, it'd probably be made of cardboard. I don't think it'll be particularly important. So, you know, as long as they're there or thereabouts, you know, he's got something to build on. He's got something to go with. And, you know, they're in a little transitional phase, which is the exact opposite of what Dortmund are in, really. Because even if they brought a few new players in, you know, they're still being guided. They're still being run in the same way. And the players they brought in, a player and personalities that fit what they're trying to do completely and what they have been trying to do for the last couple of years.
Talking of bringing players in, Schalke brought in Kevin Prince-Boateng in the final days of the transfer window. And that first game against Bayer Leverkusen seemed to do the trick, as lifted Schalke to their first win against a solid Leverkusen side. How much of an impact is Boateng just for a lift around the club, let alone on the pitch as well?
A huge, and you know, he's such a larger than life character as well. I think that's really important. He's someone who knows the region, of course, having played for Dortmund before, as Jurgen Klopp detailed in that recent text message. You know, I think it's a huge signing for them, and I think it's a huge signing for the Bundesliga as well, because you know, whatever difficulties that Boateng had, and as maybe detailed, that might have been part of his decision for him to leave Serie A and go to the Bundesliga while he's in the prime of his career, that says something for the Bundesliga. And you know, Boateng said at the start, didn't he, when he signed for Schalke, you know, I always wanted to come back here. This league is huge. I think that's so important. But sometimes people miss what a huge club Schalke is. Sometimes people outside Germany miss what a huge club Schalke is. They're enormous. They're something like the fourth, fifth best supported club in the world in terms of attendance, in terms of like heads through the turnstiles every fortnight. The pressure there is enormous, and I think it takes a certain type of player, a certain type of personality to deal with that. Boateng is definitely one of those. And, you know, I think medium and long term, there's a question over where he's going to fit, because obviously they were using Julian Draxler as the number 10. He'd been playing wide before, but they gave him the shirt. They put him in the position. He did really well. He got them through, quite frankly, two lousy performances against PAOK in the Champions League playoffs. So I guess the question is how is Boateng and Draxler going to dovetail, and that is really important, because you know, Draxler's arguably the key figure. You can tell he's a leader off the pitch as well as on it. The way he was talking about, you know, before the second leg against PAOK, we really have to step up. This is a chance we can't miss, and you know, he led with his words as much as like he led with his play, and that's extraordinary for someone of 19. So for them to work it out together is very, very important. But I think they need a little bit more solidity as well. It's going to take a bit of time to settle, and certainly defensively, that's something that can undo them, especially in the Champions League group that they're in. I think Bale are better than people give them credit for. They've kept hold of a few important forward players who you would have expected them to have lost by now, in terms of Valentin Stocker and Mohamed Salah on the left-hand side. They've got Giovanni Sio, who's built like an absolute tank from Wolfsburg, and he's going to be really, really important for them as well. So what Schalke do between now and Christmas is really going to shape the future of Jens Keller. He did amazing to get them in the Champions League, but you know, credit doesn't stay credit for long in Schalke if you're not winning.
And Kevin Prince-Boateng, I'm sure, will be a key to Schalke producing those wins. You mentioned the pressure on Boateng to go back to the Bundesliga. There's obviously an immense amount of pressure on a certain somebody at Real Madrid. There's been talk about it all week in the build-up to their game against Villarreal. Gareth Bale and Cristiano Ronaldo, we've seen the handshakes in the car park. We've seen the challenges on the training ground. Andy, are these two going to be able to play and hit it off together straight away in this Los Blancos side? And we've been told that Bale's going to be playing on the left, on the right of midfield, sorry, cutting in. Do you still see any chance of him playing in that left-back position this weekend?
No, but the joy of Real Madrid's current defensive situation, Ollie, is that the defence picks itself, because they've only got one option, really. So it's going to be Carvajal at right back, Pepe and Ramos in the centre, and Nacho at left back, which is something that Ancelotti has always said. There's definitely a mischievous little voice in the back of my brain that says, wouldn't it be amazing, knowing how Corentão and Ronaldo dovetail together for Portugal, wouldn't it be amazing to see on the same side? I mean, you know, you do wonder, and I know it's a point you made off air when we were speaking about, you know, if Bale gave it to Ronaldo and made the run outside, would he ever get it back? Maybe if Ronaldo had a shot and it sort of deflected back off a defender, perhaps. But I don't know. I think that would be fascinating. Anyway, he's gonna play on the right hand side, as we assumed, rather to the detriment of Angel Di Maria, who of course had a tremendous reception in their last game against Athletic Bilbao at the Bernabeu. The fans really love him. There's no doubt about that. And Di Maria had the opportunity to leave in the transfer window, but he dug his heels in. I think partly because of his family situation. His wife just had their first child a couple of months ago, and he didn't really want to move to a country where he didn't speak the language. But also, you know, he's thinking, look, I'm at Real Madrid, and I'm good enough to play for them. And any, like, where I go from here is going to be down, really. So I respect that he's staying and going to fight for his place. But Real Madrid are already turning into an essential watch this season. You know, they look a lot more open under Ancelotti than they have been under Mourinho. So many fine attacking players. And yeah, it looks like we're going to get a first little go of Bale and Cristiano.
And we also get to see Isco possibly thrown in this mix as well. Rumoured that he's going to be making a return to the side for this game against Villarreal. I mean, that's a three-headed monster. How do you stop it? How would you go about trying to close down and shut out a Madrid attack with those three? And then you take a player like maybe Karim Benzema and shove him up front as well. How do defences? They just put 11 men behind the ball and pray?
Yeah, or curl up in the corner and cry, I think is a possibility. But, you know, we can't forget that Villarreal, even though they are the heavy second favourites, they've started the season really well. You know, they're up there. They've won 3 out of 3. And they're playing really well with loads of confidence. Now, they've got attacking options as well. You know, they brought Calucci and Giovanni Dos Santos, of course, of Mexico off the bench last time out when they won at Osasuna, and winning up in Navarra at Osasuna is an absolutely great result. And, you know, they made it look relatively straightforward. They're absolutely full of confidence. And the reason they've got those two options off the bench is they started with Jeremy Perbe, the rather journeyman French striker, in the last game at Osasuna. He played really well as well. He's really important for them in the last couple of months before they got promoted. I really like him, even if he's been around the block and taken his time to make an impact. He's quick, he makes really intelligent runs, he's a good finisher, and he's all right pain in the backside for defenders. So they've got good options there. They've held on to some good players in their defence as well. They've still got Musacchio at centre back. They've got one of the better defensive midfielders, I think, in Spain, in Bruno, the captain, who of course was looked at by Barcelona at one point. And now they've got a goalkeeper who's really relishing a second chance in Sergio Asenjo. Of course, it was usurped Atletico Madrid, firstly by injury and then by Thibaut Courtois, and the fact that he's absolutely unmovable in that 11 at the Calderon. So, you know, they've got a bit about them to make it difficult. I can definitely see both sides scoring in this, especially, like we said, with the openness of Real Madrid. But, well, it's going to be exciting. And when they were working so hard to get promoted at the end of last season, because it wasn't a given, this is exactly the sort of match that they would have been doing it for.
It's a great opportunity as well to see this goalkeeping situation at Madrid. Once again, Diego Lopez is going to be the starting keeper. Iker Casillas told that he will be playing in the Champions League games this year. There's still plenty of interest around Iker Casillas from English sides, and I'm sure there are sides all over the planet that would love to bring him in as a goalkeeper. If it stays like this, Andy, do you see him sticking out a season being a Champions League goalkeeper at Real Madrid? I mean, sure, there's a chance to win La Decima with them, but I mean, is that enough to keep him going?
Well, I think January transfers are that big, are really, really hard to broker. I think everyone, apart from the most desperate, is a bit worried that they're going to get their pants pulled down in the January window, to use Harry Redknapp's vernacular that he'd really stick to, because he bought a load of heinously expensive players on massive wages after that. But a deal like Casillas is really, really hard to do anyway, even harder to do in January. So I don't really see that. I think it remains to be seen whether Diego Lopez will play the whole season. Of course, injuries happen and stuff. But it's an amazing thought to think that Casillas is only second choice. But what I find so interesting is, you know, Ancelotti is someone, he's not wet behind the ears. He managed at Milan for 8 years under Berlusconi. He knows that there's political pressure incumbent in running a team at a club of that size. He knows exactly what it means to leave out Iker Casillas, but he's saying, no, Diego Lopez is a better goalkeeper, I'm going with him. And he knows exactly what people are going to say. And he's obviously, like, you know, got the signal from upstairs that it's okay to do that, and they're not about to boot him out in the street for doing it. And I think it says something about how Casillas is valued, or to what extent he's valued by Florentino Perez and the board. That, you know, they'll put up with a situation like that with a player so iconic as him. So I think, firstly, it puts Mourinho's decision, which everyone had assumed to be solely political and solely vindictive, in some sort of perspective. And also, it says that, you know, that this is maybe a situation that's going to continue. I can see it running for this season. I think, especially given the reserves that Spain have at the moment, I don't think Casillas would be majorly keen to move in January, even if he could. But next summer, maybe.
It'd be interesting to see if Iker Casillas does decide to make a move away. And as you said, Andy, a step down is the only way to go from Real Madrid if he decides
unless
to take
you join Arsenal, of course.
Oh, yeah, well, of course, happy Mesut Ozil being paraded around the Emirates. I tell you what, Andy, I know I'm a bit of an anti-Arsenal kind of guy for no reason apart from it was born and bred into me, but I still don't see Ozil making that impact for Arsenal and taking them to a kind of a guaranteed fourth spot again. I still think that Tottenham will be able to push them despite the signing of Mesut Ozil, because it hasn't paved over the cracks for me.
Well, I think it's going to make a huge difference to Arsenal, even if it doesn't fix all their faults. And I think someone recently made the excuse, you know, it's like, I don't know, getting your kitchen done out when you've got a hole in the roof or something like that with marble tops. But I don't know, to extend the interior design metaphor, I think, you know, if you went into someone's house and it was a bit shabby, but they had a purple velvet diamante encrusted canopy, you'd still sofa, that's the word in English, isn't it, sofa, yeah. you'd still look at it and think, what a sofa, wouldn't you? I mean, you know, it's still cool to have. I don't think there's any doubt about that. And, you know, to say that he's not a step up from what they've already got is patently untrue. You know, he's gonna make a huge difference. And the good news for you is I bet you any money you like that he won't score the winning goal against Sheffield Wednesday in this year's FA Cup final.
I will not be taking that bet, my friend, because I'm pretty sure the reason why that's not going to happen. But hey, we can all still dream, Andy. We can all still dream. And on that note, I will leave you to get back to prepare for your weekend and to enjoy the rest of your day, mate. Andy, we always appreciate you coming on the show, even if you do insist on having a cheeky pop at Sheffield Wednesday as you leave. It might be a few months before you get back here, mate, but we'll look forward to getting in contact with you as soon as possible, man.
It's all about the Owls. Have a good weekend.
Take care, mate. Andy Brassel joining us here on World Football Daily, talking all things European football, Real Madrid, of course, Bale and Ronaldo together for the first time.